as he already mentioned, for the National Park Service. And he's taking the lead for the CSTEs, and I had to ask what that is, because you know, there's so many abbreviations going around, and that stands for the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists. And one should know that as an epidemiologist, but at times it's good to get some of these abbreviations taken care of. So he is piloting a new and novel approach for collecting and analyzing travel history data, and I think that's a very timely and very interesting topic. And I'm curious about your results.
Sure. Okay. All right. Thank you for the introduction. This is getting towards the end of the conference. I appreciate your attendance. So I'm primarily an infectious disease epidemiologist for the National Park Service, and I've been with the program for about 8.5 years. A lot of people, when they first hear there's an epidemiologist at the National Park Service, they are surprised that there is a physician who's working there. And I wanted to start with a little bit of background. I see my position really as a state epidemiologist for the national park. So just like someone might have a jurisdiction of all the residents of, say, New Mexico or Minnesota responsible for infection disease control for those populations, my jurisdiction is just very far flung. So we've got units, 401 units in 50 states and 4 territories in the District of Columbia, and about 275 to 285 million visitors a year. So if we really did a good job with controlling all this, then you know, it'd be a very, very busy job for a person. But because we're so new, when I first started, really a lot of the investigations that might occur or a case report that might occur with a park visitor or a park employee before I arrived, they didn't get investigated very well. And that's partly because with federal jurisdiction land, a lot of states don't necessarily know if they have authority to do investigations, but then they don't know necessarily what kind of capacity that agency has. And so unfortunately, a lot of investigations just didn't happen. And states by themselves, we all know, are already overworked and overburdened with kind of taking care of their own population. So a lot of the work that I do is kind of liaison work. We may lead investigations. Sometimes we just coordinate investigations with local and state health departments. But it is a pretty important job. Besides our 285 million visitors or so, we also have 22,000 full-time employees, 25,000 concession employees. They're the folks that run the lodging and the food in the different parks, and about 200,000 volunteers each year. So it's really quite large. Now, we've, over the years, I investigate different diseases. It's about 60 different disease responses per year, mostly in the summer. We've also started to develop surveillance systems where we collect data at parks so that we get a good idea about any kind of outbreaks that might be occurring, get an early warning. But something that we realized early on is that because of the nature of incubation periods for most infectious disease pathogens, by the time someone might be exposed in a park, and when they incubate, go develop symptoms, and then see a provider, they're not in the park anymore. So the idea of just collecting park-based data is really going to be a disservice to all the potential exposures that are out there. And so what we really have tried to do is coordinate more with health departments, because when there is a notifiable disease, the health department, local or state, are going to be the ones responsible for finding that patient, interviewing that patient, hopefully finding out about travel history. And if they find out that the park is included in the incubation period, if they know about our program, then hopefully that information can be shared with us, and we can help do a park-based investigation if needed. There's a lot of ifs in there, and one of the big ifs is whether or not health departments are collecting quality travel history data that could help us learn about potential park exposures. And this is important because not just to learn about park exposures, but I think travel history in general is very important, as we know from Ebola right now, that, you know, knowing about where people traveled can help you think about specific diseases. It can help you find common source exposures, linking patients across jurisdictions. It can help us guide active surveillance. So if we know that there's a location where we're seeing a lot of specific cases, we might do surveillance of non-sick patients to see if maybe there were cases that did not present to medical care. We can also help decide to do any kind of environmental site investigations. So there's a lot of power that travel history could potentially provide for public health interventions, and I'm not sure that it's really being maximized. We did an early study in 2010. I'm based in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and we wanted to see with New Mexico Health Department how they were doing with travel history data. And we looked at 27 different diseases, and this is just one slide because I don't want to go into this too much detail. But we picked diseases, you know, foodborne diseases, waterborne, vector-borne, zoonotic, vaccine-preventable, all kinds of diseases that we thought travel history was going to be potentially important. And the most telling data on this slide is right here on the top right, where we looked at in the electronic database at the New Mexico Department of Health how many case reports of the over 2,000 that we looked at for these 27 diseases over a four-year period, how many of them had any travel history recorded at all, not talking about the quality, but just anything. And it was less than 50%. About 49% of the cases had anything recorded. And this varied a little bit by disease category, so foodborne and waterborne was a little bit higher, 53 to 63%, but then as low as only 6% for vaccine-preventable diseases. And so we had a question after we did the study, you know, how many other states or of the 2,700 local health jurisdictions that are collecting these data are also not necessarily collecting or recording this information in a way that makes it useful for cluster detection. And so we weren't really sure. And so what we ended up doing was partnering with Meredith and others at the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists to do a travel history pilot beyond this one jurisdiction. And our idea, based on some of the information that we learned from the New Mexico study, was that we wanted to see if we could develop a system that was standardized. So I didn't show the data, but we found for those 27 diseases in New Mexico, there were 8 different ways that travel history was asked for those different 27 diseases. So there was not one way travel history was asked. Sometimes it was travel out of state, sometimes it was any overnight, sometimes it was travel outside the U.S. It varied, and not for really any good reason. It varied even within foodborne disease or waterborne disease. So we wanted to see, could we develop something that's more standardized and consistent for the disease investigators? We also wanted to make it fairly simple because we've already mentioned before that the burden on health department staff is already very high. And so we don't want to make it something more cumbersome. Our hope is that we develop something that is for questions they're already asking, but we provide a better framework for reporting that information. And then we also found from New Mexico that for many of the diseases, including the vaccine-preventable diseases that had only 6% with travel history data, the only way that you could record travel history data for those diseases was through an empty comments box. So there's really no prompt to say what information is important to capture and make it more efficient for them to get that information. So we wanted to make sure that our system had a mix of categorical questions as well as free text fields, because obviously you need some level of detail that cannot always be captured by a categorical question, but we don't want it to be exclusively free text field. We piloted this current year, from April 1st to October 31st for 7 months, and it was for 9 diseases. And we recruited 25 different jurisdictions, and I'll show you them a little bit later. And this was through our CST Travel History Work Group. And as we all know, in public health, things work just based on who you know and the connections that you make. So almost all of the jurisdictions we recruited were friends or friends of friends of people on our committee. And that's how we ended up getting this initial pilot group. We had no funding at all for this, so this is something that we're just kind of doing on a shoestring budget. But again, we were able to convey to health departments that this is something that, you know, maybe can help improve surveillance practice, and that they could be, you know, their experience and their participation could help to make changes potentially nationwide. We also did a survey beforehand of case investigators to understand what their knowledge, attitudes, and practices are regarding travel history. And then we haven't yet issued the post-intervention survey, but this survey is going to be more practical in terms of how easy was it to implement these questions. You know, did you find that the information was useful? Did you do any analyses of these data that you otherwise wouldn't have? So the 9 diseases that we looked at are listed here in this table, and there were 7 vector-borne diseases, mostly tick-borne diseases, and 1 mosquito-borne disease, West Nile virus. And of those 7, they're all nationally reportable except for tick-borne relapsing fever, which is only reportable in 12 western states. And then we had 2 waterborne diseases, cryptosporidiosis and jardiasis. And so I think just a quick snapshot of the national case counts from the MMWR for 2009 to 2011, you can see that there's some variation in terms of incidence of these diseases. Tularemia is relatively rare. There's only about 100 or 200 cases per year in the nation. And then you have as high as Lyme disease up in the 30,000s. And then in the middle are the 2 waterborne diseases, crypto and giardia. just to give you a sense about the data that we collected, so each of these 25 jurisdictions had very different data collection forms and systems. So what we ended up doing is developing one pager paper form that people could then fill out with the relevant data. We try to make it simple. So the top part is just demographics and very basic information that we might want to do analyses on. And then the second part of the page is where we develop these questions. And this was done in concert with our working group, which consisted of local, state, and federal health officials. And I'll just walk through some of the highlights here. So instead of, you know, if we go to the default, you know, empty comments box, you know, which we're trying to avoid and have the death of that, here we develop some questions where we just, they're not earth-shattering, but really we just allow important information to be categorized, such as did you travel outside your county of residence, yes or no, yes or no did you travel out of state, yes or no did you travel out of the country, so that we could capture some of that very basic information and then have the details included in this kind of free text table. And then the second part of it is, again, trying to capture not just geographic locations, but also specific locations that we might want to do any kind of health intervention, like education or environmental investigation, et cetera. And so we kind of discussed this as a group, but we thought of some things that might have relevance for many diseases and included them, like parks, beaches, and other water recreational water sources, festivals or county fairs. You might have a lot of person-to-person transmission or a foodborne event. Transmission might occur there, and other large public gatherings. And this was just to try and capture most of this information. If it's being collected all now, would just be embedded in a field, text field. It's really hard to look at it beyond just helping that individual case. So we wanted to experiment with having a way to categorize some high priority kinds of settings. And anecdotally, this study stopped data collection on October 31st, just a few weeks ago. So we still have very little data yet that we've received from the 25 jurisdictions. But anecdotally, people said that this was not a burden and that it didn't really take any extra time. It just was giving them a better way to record the information. So hopefully what we suspected, hold true from our post-intervention surveys. These are the jurisdictions that participated, and it's a mix of state, county, and city health departments. And one thing that I really like about this is we got participation from at least one health department in every one of the 10 HHS regions. We got a big cluster in Texas because we had two work group members from Texas. And then we've got quite a few up here in the upper Midwest. And this is the breakdown, again, of the participating jurisdictions by state, region, county, city, county, et cetera. One thing that I just want to note is that the jurisdictions, if they participated, they didn't have to participate with all 9 diseases. They could just participate whichever ones that they had energy and enthusiasm for, they felt like there was going to be interesting information. So it varies. And our hope is that by the end we will have at least 500 case reports from this 7-month pilot period that we can analyze and get a sense about the data that are collected for these different diseases. The Ebola outbreak, unfortunately, for this project really came in the last couple months, and so a lot of the groups, I think, are really swamped with that. And so I haven't even pestered anyone who hasn't already sent data to get the data to us. I think we're going to just hold off for a few months. Again, health department staff, dealing with this was a huge burden on a lot of them, and we want to be cognizant and sensitive to that. What I can show you today, since I don't have a lot of that post data and the actual data to show, is just some key findings from the pre-intervention survey, which we did in April before the pilot started. And we had very high response rate, 85%. And the majority of the respondents were public health nurses or epidemiologists. And we were specifically targeting the people in these 25 jurisdictions that do the investigations or do any investigations at all. So that's the group we really want to understand their perspectives on. We had a nice range between people that were new to public health, 1 to 5 years, or up to very experienced, 11 to 20, pretty well distribution, similar distribution for all those different categories. And it was about 70% respondents from local city or county health departments, and 30% at the state, region, or district level. We asked questions about their attitudes and practices on travel history. I think a couple things that are interesting here. The top part of this table, almost everyone felt that travel history was important to collect for the different categories of disease. 97 plus percent for vaccine-preventable food, zoonotic diseases, and even 88% for any infectious disease. So again, the idea that travel history is not important is not really a concern here. We also, in these next two questions, I thought was interesting. We asked, most travel history data are captured by categorical questions. 77% agreed or strongly agreed with that, and only 46% agreed or strongly agreed that most travel history data are captured by free text narratives. I actually thought those would be flipped a little bit, but it might be that my speculation is that when you have just a free text box, it's very easy to ignore that altogether, and so you're not collecting any data that way. And so maybe the only data that are collected are the ones that people can do through an actual question where they're prompted about something to ask and then can check a category. These last two questions I think are really illuminating too from our perspective, because we asked these investigators, would having standardized travel history questions for multiple diseases improve data quality? That's what we're trying to do with this pilot. 86% agreed or strongly agreed that would help improve quality of data. And then 88% also agreed that having standardized electronic fields across diseases in electronic databases would also improve data quality. That was another limitation that we found in the New Mexico data set, was that they would ask questions one way on paper, but then there was no corresponding questions in electronic database. So there's no way to really transcribe that information across those systems. And then finally here with barriers, we were trying to understand what are barriers that we could potentially do interventions for in the future with this study or future studies. And really nothing was a major barrier. You know, the main ones at the top here were 35% said that agreed or strongly agreed that travel history data are not easily entered in electronic surveillance systems, again mirroring the New Mexico experience. 33% said case patients do not recall travel history with great accuracy. That's not something we can always control, but one thing that we can strive to do is do interviews as soon as possible before people forget. I need to get back here a little bit. Okay, there. And then the third one here that was most common was, I've not been adequately trained on how to collect a quality travel history. 22% agreed or strongly agreed with that. It's great. It's very, I think, helpful here at the very bottom. It says, I do not think travel history is an important field. Again, mirroring our data from earlier, only 1% thought that. So it's not so much a matter, and also travel questions significantly increased my workload. Only 9% thought that. So some of these assumptions that I had about workload or importance maybe don't hold true, and maybe just developing a better framework will help people to collect the information that they already are motivated and think is important to collect already. So our next steps are, we're going to have a lot of data entry and analysis as we get these forms over the next few months. Our hope is to meet together as a working group and finalize it as a report for CSTE, maybe put together a manuscript. The way the CSTE mechanism works is, after, if you want to make a change on a more global level across different states, is you have to develop a position statement that is sponsored by one of the state epidemiologists. And if we have good data to suggest developing a standardized system that we hope to get voted on by the states, we may consider that route. In the meantime, you know, I think that there's very little research done on travel history. In the literature, I don't think you'll find very much. We're hoping to publish our New Mexico study pretty soon. But, you know, I think there's a lot of other opportunities. And with Ebola, maybe there will be more focus paid to this. And so our hope is that maybe working with CDC or the National Association of County and City Health Officials, other kinds of groups, to help promote the idea of improving how we collect surveillance data on travel history, maybe developing trainings. These are all kinds of ideas that we'd like to see, you know, happen. And again, from my selfish perspective, it's the only way that I, as a Park Service epidemiologist, going to know about a case that is of relevance to me is if a good travel history is collected. So with that, that's the end of my presentation. I'm happy to take any questions at this time. This is my boss retired 2 weeks ago, and this is his favorite slide. He included it in every presentation he gave. And so now I feel like I need to do that. I have to carry on his tradition. And I mean, it's going to be really sad that he's gone, but I have to move on. So. Thank you.
Using tablets or that, so that you're not skipping the data entry.
Yeah, we talked about different things. One thing that we developed after consulting with the jurisdictions, because we had a couple calls just with the participating jurisdictions in advance, and some people asked about having an EpiInfo module, not tablet, because not all of them have tablets, but just a module where they could enter the data. We developed that, and then unfortunately there were some bugs with it, and so a couple jurisdictions tried it. And I guess we didn't have it programmed right, and they ended up abandoning it. So a couple of the jurisdictions sent it to me by Excel spreadsheet instead of paper. They at least entered it themselves in a spreadsheet. But you know, it's going to be some cleaning, and that's unfortunate. It's just again, it's not funded, so this is something that we're just kind of doing on our own.
I can imagine that will be a huge amount of work. We did some data collection with 100,000 subjects. It's maybe a bit different, however, and it was all done at that time with paper questionnaires. And there's a lot of cleaning up to do.
There will be. And it's a great question. And with something. We tried that too. There was a barrier with that. I can't remember what it was. Maybe I didn't know enough about the thing. Yeah. So we certainly a lot of this is the limitations of my knowledge probably of what was available, and it's great to meet people that can help me learn. So thank you.
This is very interesting work because surveillance on this scale are certainly great importance. If one thinks about it, epidemiology is founded on. If you go back to Snow in England, where the outbreaks were, he mapped out the hot spots. That's the very beginning, in essence, of modern epidemiology. And I was almost surprised to hear we don't have that like that yet, at least in that system, because it would provide a rich database and actually help more rapidly to get information. And over periods of times, and maybe at one point when it is all electronically, to get it even in more real time with the right software.
Yeah. Good. Well, thank you for your attention, guys.